Welcome to Money for Life with Rocky Mountain Wealth Partners, Robert Stanlick. Advice to build and protect your wealth and your money for life. Money for Life is sponsored. The views expressed do not reflect those of KRDO staff and management. And now, here's your host, Robert Stanlick.
Good morning and welcome to the Money for Life show. My name is Robert Stanlick. Mike Muir will be joining us here in just a few minutes. But I wanted to take a little bit of time and talk about some of the phone calls that I received from people throughout the week concerned about everything that happens in the news. And it can be everything from the tariffs that were announced on Mexico and Canada on steel and aluminum this week, to the Fed overshooting their targets, to inflation, deflation, you name it, all kinds of different scenarios are out there that can affect the market and your investments. Well, I wanted to tell you about a tool that I use that I have created some very proprietary features with this that lets us stress test your investments. And what we do is basically we plug in your investments. It can pull the average returns that it has produced. And then we can add specific scenarios to years. So let's say that you're concerned about inflation. So we put in their inflation, and there's three options, because some inflation can actually be good for your investments, and some investments do better in high inflationary periods. So we can mark that year we're looking at inflation. Then we can also mark the next year, okay, the tax cuts have come in, how would that affect my investments? And we can go year by year with different scenarios as to how we think different scenarios would play out. And then we run the analysis report. And if you're pulling money out, we take that into a factor and show each year how much money is coming out. If you're adding contributions, let's say for the next 5 years, we put that in. And then it runs a scenario and it shows us year by year going out till age 90, age 100, as to how your portfolio will react to each scenario year by year and how much you have left based on your life expectancy. It's a great tool to work with. It really helps you to see right in front of you, okay, well, if this happens and the investments I have in my portfolio right now may react this way to it, I think I'm in good shape. Or you may run a scenario where, geez, if we do have higher interest rates and higher inflation, maybe we need to find some different investments that would respond better than what I currently have. And for right now, we'll offer a free review on this to the listeners on the show, absolutely free. Now, in a couple weeks, we're actually going to have to start charging for this service. So be sure and give us a call if you'd like to get in on this. The number to call is 400-6521. That's 400-6521. You can give us a call, leave us a message, and we'll get in touch with you to set up a time to review that and get your investments plugged in to this very unique planning and risk strategy program that we have. And again, the number to call is 400-6521. Okay, just to kind of give you an idea of how these scenarios play out with your investments, I am going to look at a trade war scenario with the U.S. and China, and I'm going to compare it to the S&P 500. And what this program does is it actually goes in and uses economic conditions and calculates and estimates what the effect would be on the 12-month Treasury bill, what it would be on consumer price index, what it would mean on oil, retail sales, unemployment, GDP growth, and the dollar. And it gives a good, a moderate, and a bad scenario that plays out. So let's say the U.S. and China come to some type of truce with this. Maybe U.S. can help cut some of the trade deficit. In this scenario, the key scenario levers would project the S&P could be up 5%. The 10-year Treasury would rise to about 3.06. The 12-month T-bill yield would go to 2.49. We would get a nice little bump in consumer price index to 3.81. And retail sales would be up 5.17. And U.S. GDP growth would be at 3.11. Well, now let's take a look at what the worst case would be, and that would be a repeat of the 1930s. In this scenario, you could see the 12-month T-bill fall to 1.25, retail sales would fall about 0.72, and again, these are economic factors that this program has put together and has estimated what would happen with these. And we would take this scenario and compare it to each individual investment and see how they would respond in this scenario based on how sensitive they are to each of these key levers or scenarios that we have. Unemployment would go up to 4.8 in the repeat the 1930s. U.S. GDP growth would actually go negative or would drop down by 1.96 points to 0.9, and the dollar would fall about 5%. When you take a look at what all these levers would have as compared to the S&P 500, they're estimating you would see the S&P drop by 35%. So we can use this and look for key indicators and different investments and how they respond specifically to this scenario to help build a portfolio to help protect you against the scenarios you're most concerned with. Now, let me say, this isn't financial advice. This isn't, I'm not telling you to do something with the S&P to buy or sell. I'm just kind of going through different levels and using the S&P as the overall indicator with this. So again, if you'd like to have a scenario run against your investments, give us a call at 400-6521. That's 400-6521. And each week we'll take a look at a little different scenario to see how it plays out, look at the economic conditions that may affect these scenarios, from the Fed becoming hawkish to higher interest rates to, you know, everything to baby boomers retiring are scenarios that we can run against this. So again, if you'd like to sit down and have your portfolio stress tested in this manner, give us a call at 400-6521. All right. This is the Money for Life show. The all-knowing, all-powerful Mike Muir, estate planning attorney, is joining us now. And again, if you have a question for us or would like more information during the week, give us a call at 400-6521. And Mike has been hard at work studying some changes that the governor of Colorado just signed in. So jump in and tell us how that affects people with trust and exactly what the changes are.
Yeah, it's been probably 30 years since there's been a comprehensive change of the trust code here in Colorado. And recently, the legislature adopted and proposed that we, state of Colorado, adopt the Uniform Trust Code. And the governor's recently signed that into effect. And what that means is that there's more opportunities here in the state of Colorado to customize your trust. For instance, you can limit now who are interested persons for purposes of this trust. So let's say you have that nosy son-in-law who might want to find out information on the trust under the new trust code. You can limit his ability or other parties' abilities to access information.
And does this apply to trusts going forward or all trusts that are out there and active now?
So this would apply to all trusts and interpretation, which makes it very important if you have a trust in existence that you have it reviewed to ensure that it complies with the new trust language. What's also nice about the state of Colorado adopting the Uniform Trust Code is that it allows this trust to work effectively in other states that have also adopted this Uniform Trust Code. So it makes the trust much more portable.
And you just mentioned the review thing, and I really can't emphasize enough that if you've had a trust written and it's been 4, 5, 6 years, sit down and get it reviewed to make sure, like Mike said, the language is in place. But there's another real important thing is how many limits on the deductions have we had just in the last 10 years where it was $5 million, it was zero, it's this, it's that.
Yeah, as early as 2001, the state tax exemption was $600,000, and the state tax was 55%. So if you had $700,000 in assets between your home and your investments, you'd be paying $55,000. Well, not you, because you'd be passed away, but your heirs, right, would be paying. So, yeah, there's been significant changes. If I know right now the estate tax exemption is $11.2 million, which most of my clients are below that. However, if Hillary had been elected, she was talking and proposing reducing that estate tax exemption to $1 million. And many of my clients, between their pensions, IRAs, and their home, especially with home values having increased so greatly in the last 5 years even, are well over that $1 million number.
And the other thing that, you know, just kind of sitting on the sidelines looking in at what attorneys do, you guys subscribe to services that consistently and constantly update provisions and wording in trust. And some attorneys update all the time. Others buy it and forget to update. So there can be trusts that are written out there that maybe were written on a program that hasn't been upgraded for 3 or 4 years that can cause a lot of problems.
That's correct. You definitely want to take a look at your trust every couple of years and make sure that it does what you want, but in addition that it also complies with any changes in the law and that it's using all the latest opportunities available for the beneficiaries. Like one of those opportunities with the new Uniform Trust Code is that they allow a trust to require arbitration or alternative dispute resolution if the beneficiaries get in an argument. So let's say one of the beneficiaries is very upset. Up until last year, his recourse would have been, or her recourse would have been, to go to court. And then you have to hire attorneys and have public proceedings and basically air the family's dirty laundry, you know, in the public. With this alternative dispute resolution opportunity, which now exists, we can add a paragraph to your existing trust that requires, if there's an argument, that it go to alternative dispute resolution.
And if you're sitting out there wondering, geez, how was my trust written? Give us a call, 400-6521, and just ask to set up a free consultation with Mike, and he'll be happy to go over that with you. And I was talking about the two different programs a few years ago. Kind of the hot thing in trust planning was to set a husband up with a trust and a wife up with a trust and split the assets before anybody even died, but just had it in separate trust. You mentioned something now that if somebody inherits something, and I can't remember the stupid TV show. Oh, it'll come to me. But maybe they wanted the house and the other kid got cash, but the other kid wanted the house and the other one wanted cash. Explain what this new law does in that scenario.
Well, we all know that trusts are usually written long before they actually go into play. So let's say you had a son who lived off in Washington, and he never really visited the cabin ever, and your daughter lived here in town, and her kids used to go to the cabin all the time because the cabin's only like 50 miles away from her house. But then that changed. The son moved back, and the daughter moved away, but your trust gives the cabin to the daughter, who now lives maybe in New Zealand. Well, that doesn't really make sense. Under the new uniform trust code, that allows trust beneficiaries to reach settlements between each other and potentially trade assets. So, for instance, the son could take the cabin in that instance because now he's the one using it, and the daughter could take the cash, which she may have more need for.
So it's really adding some flexibility into the system, not only before death, but after death.
That's correct. There's a lot of exciting things that have happened, and a lot of things now that trust can accomplish that previously would have been much more difficult.
The first question, when I'm talking to people about whether they need to come see you or not, is, do you have property out of state? Does this help in any way with somebody that's got a summer home in Arizona and their primary residence here in Colorado?
Yes, definitely. So one of the primary reasons that people do trust is because they have property out of state. And so if they passed away here with a simple will, what would happen is they would open a probate here in Colorado and have a court system and a set of attorneys here in Colorado, but they would also have to open an ancillary probate in the other state because you need that other state's court to actually act over the property. We had a case where dad died here and he owned some farmland with his brothers back in New York, and we had to open up a probate here in Colorado and open up an ancillary probate in New York, and New York attorneys are far more expensive. The other interesting thing about that case is that New York requires the personal representative to actually reside in that state. So what ended up happening is we opened up a probate here in Colorado with the son who lived here, but the son did not have a residence in New York, so we had to hire a New York attorney. That New York attorney had to hire a CPA to act as personal representative, and then we had to hire a realtor in order to sell the property. So it led to a real mess. What happened is the realtor would get an offer, send it to the CPA in New York. The New York CPA would talk to the New York lawyer. The New York lawyer would call me up and tell me, and then I'd call the son and tell him. So you can see how that gets expensive very quickly.
Yeah, it's amazing, and really understanding what your trust is, what you want to accomplish, is really job one with this. And Mike will do a great job in sitting down and explaining with you, even have a family meeting to say, this is what we're setting up, this is what the wishes and the plans were, and this is how we want to work through it. So again, if you would like that free consultation, give us a call at 400-6521. That's 400-6521. What other ramifications do you see coming out of this new law?
Well, I think what's going to happen is a lot of people that were a little hesitant to use a trust because of some of the requirements that did exist will now view it in a much more favorable light. Like, for instance, the whole concept of keeping your business private, I think, is very appealing to people. Instead of having a public probate where basically anyone can check out the file and under the right circumstances see, you know, what you had, who's in charge, and when your kids are getting the money or when your heirs are getting the money, by utilizing a trust, there is no probate, there is no public file, and all of your personal business is kept private.
You know, I remember hearing probate, and this dates me a little bit, but you know, you always had to run an ad in the newspaper, so-and-so died, this is your last chance to claim a debt. Did they still do that?
Yeah, they still do that, yeah. So when we do a lot of attorneys will say, well, you don't really need a trust. Probate is easy in Colorado, which it is relative to other states, by the way. But the average probate still takes 12 to 18 months, or at least the ones I've been involved in. Most of them last at least 12 months, one day, because that's the length of time that a personal representative can actually be liable relative to the assets and the distributions and the creditors. So easy to an attorney here in Colorado means that you get to pay that attorney for 1 year. And according to AARP, the average cost of probate here in Colorado is 1.9% of the estate. So, I mean, it is expensive when I do that math, and it It does take a long time. When I look at a trust taking about 2 or 3 weeks to resolve and a probate taking about a year.
How tough is it to maintain a trust? You sell your house, you go buy a new one, you've moved, so now you got a new checking account. What are the steps that people have to do to keep all this up to date and make sure that everything stays the way the trust is supposed to be done?
Well, there's many different types of trusts. So if you have an irrevocable trust set up maybe for a special needs child, or, you know, your grandfather passed away and he had, $1 billion and the bank's managing it, then the bank is doing all that paperwork. But most of the families that I work with, people who created the trust are in charge of it. It uses their social security number, so they file taxes just like they did last year. And if they want to paint the house purple, they can do so. And if they want to invest in, CDs at U.S. Bank or, investments with Rocky Mountain Wealth Partners, they can do so. So really managing a trust while the original creators are alive is very easy. Instead of signing their name, they sign their name, comma, trustee.
And that's one of the biggest things that I see is they open up a new checking account or they do something and they just throw their names on there instead of putting the trust on.
That's correct. It's very, very easy to manage a trust.
Yeah. So, but it is very important that you keep all this stuff up, which kind of brings us to the next point. Can you apply a payable on death to a checking account? So it's technically not in the trust, but when that person passes away, it's payable to the trust at their death.
Yes. And actually, that's what I recommend when it comes to checking accounts. So normally, my clients who have trusts keep their regular checking account where they receive their pension or their Social Security checks separate and apart. So the checking account that they use to go to the grocery store, buy gas, maybe give gifts to the grandkids, that stays outside of the trust. But you want to keep that transferred to the trust upon death, and we use payable on deaths or transfer on deaths in order to accomplish that.
Again, Mike is offering a free consultation to anyone that would like to have a review of their trust. Maybe you've decided you need one and you haven't got around to doing it. Give us a call at 400-6516, 400-6516, and we'll be happy to get you on the calendar to review that. A lot of stuff that we're throwing out to people here as they're driving in their cars or listening to the radio. It's tough to pick that phone up and call. But what do they really, the mindset they need to get into to get through the paralysis before they even do anything?
Right. Well, if a lot of people think if they have a will or even if they don't, that they have an estate plan, which is true. Because basically, if you don't do the planning, the government's going to do the planning for you. And that means that courts and lawyers and maybe family members that you don't want to be participating are going to be the ones that are making these decisions for you. So it's important if you want to leave a legacy of peace and harmony, so to speak, that you start doing some of this on your own. So pick out who's going to handle your finances if you become incapacitated, who's going to make those medical decisions if you're not able to, and who's going to be in charge of your legacy or your lifetime of hard work if you pass or when you pass.
Yeah, and you just mentioned something about if you become incapacitated and you're in the hospital in a coma, who can step in to do that stuff if you don't have the proper documentation? What happens if you don't? What does a child or a relative have to do if they aren't on the account to actually help manage that checking account, pay the bills, that kind of stuff?
So what they have to do is they have to go through a legal process in order to get that authority. So that authority comes from the state of Colorado court system. So in order to get control over the money in the event someone is incapacitated and doesn't have a financial power of attorney, the people or the loved ones end up having to petition the court to be appointed the conservator. And that involves filing a petition. Sometimes it involves a criminal background check along with a credit report. And then a friend of the court comes out and interviews everyone. And if everything checks out, then the judge will put a stamp or her stamp of approval on it. And the same basically for a medical power of attorney. If that document doesn't exist, then the court has to decide. And the court has to choose from among those people who are applying. So if we have two daughters who don't necessarily get along when it comes to making these decisions and each of them are applying, then it's the judge who has to decide who would be better, would better represent your wishes.
And I'm sure they jump on that and get it done within, you know, the first couple hours that you go to the court, right?
Yeah, so the fastest you can get something like that done typically is about 3 to 6 weeks here in Colorado. So there's definitely a lag time. And if someone contests it, then you're looking at a contested hearing, and that usually is about 4 to 6 months out right now.
Wow. Well, we'll put the offer out there again. If you would like to sit down with Mike and review your estate plan, if you've got questions on wills, trust, if you've got questions on, geez, you know, I've got three kids and two of them are great, but one I don't know about, Mike could sit down and talk to you about how to protect that third one from themselves, basically inside a trust, right?
Exactly. I have a lot of clients who are thinking they're going to leave it all to one daughter or one child, and then they'll leave that child instructions as to how that's supposed to be managed for the two other kids that aren't quite as financially astute. I had a recent case where one of my clients gave an $800,000 IRA to the one daughter, and she's supposed to distribute it to the other two children. And unfortunately, what that did was that created an $800,000 tax liability for the good daughter. And then the two other, I don't want to use the word screw-ups, but the two other less financially astute ones had zero tax consequences with that. So, yeah, there's far better ways to do that. If that had been done through a trust or another mechanism, all of that would have been avoided.
Well, we hope you enjoyed the show today. Again, if you'd like to set up a time to talk with Mike, 400-6521. If you would like to have the analysis that I talked about earlier in the show with understanding your risk parameters, what your investments would do under different risk categories, you can call the same number, 400-6521, 400-6521. We'd be happy to sit down and talk with you, review your estate plan. If you've got questions on reverse mortgages, refinancing, maybe you're doing a first purchase or you're wanting to buy some additional real estate, Mary Thorne at Starkey Mortgage can help you with that. You can call us and say, I'd like to talk to somebody about the mortgage or reverse mortgage, and we'll be happy to set you up with that. And the number to call is 400-6521. 400-6521. I hope everybody has a great weekend. We'll be back here next Saturday morning at 11:30.
The opinions voiced in this radio show are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific investment advice or recommendations. Individuals should always consult their own tax or financial advisor regarding their specific financial situation before acting on any information provided. Securities and investment advisory services offered through Genos Wealth Management, Inc., member FINRA SIPC.